Well, we're going to, this evening, if you've been with us through August, we've been praying for, we've been preaching through a little plus one series. So far, we've been in Philippians, haven't we? We've been in Genesis, we've been in Romans this morning. And we've been in 2 Corinthians, we're going to be in tonight. For those of you who've not been with us so far, it's kind of looking at, that's not Amazing Grace. It's kind of looking at one verse in particular, like a famous verse, and then looking at the almost famous next verse that follows. Hopefully you catch a gist. Here we go. Hoping that there's not a PowerPoint issue again, is it? Anyway, let's press on. Every time I'm relying on a photo as well, if that's at all possible. But anyway, let's not worry. If we're honest, none of us like to feel weak. We don't like facing hardship. Equally, we don't like it when we are confronted with difficulties and struggles. You know, there are times when we find it insulting when we don't get what we want. And there's also times when we feel this way when we don't get what we ask for. The reality is we just aren't fond of pain or even slight discomfort. So what do? Well, we moan, don't we, a lot of the time. And let's be honest, some people moan, I'm keeping my eyes down now, some people moan about absolutely anything. And to prove my point, let me share some actual responses I recently read online. Most of you, or a lot of you, know that I'm going away, traveling to South Africa with a family in a few days' time. And as a result, I spent many hours looking for good places to visit and stay. Now, whilst I was searching, I came across this incredible wilderness. And the problem is that this wilderness area is not in South Africa. It's actually in the States. But what drew me to the place wasn't the incredible pictures, but something else. An employee had shared some actual responses from comment cards left in a visitor box. In my notes, it says here, let me show you a picture of the place first so you can get a feel of what it looks like. I'm guessing that might not be coming. So let's not, we'll just press on. I'm not going to give you the place name, but you can ask me after if you want to. But you know, these are genuine responses left on comment cards back in 1996. They are a little bit old, but let me share them with you. Trails need to be wider so people can walk while holding hands. Trails need to be reconstructed. Please avoid building trails whilst going uphill. Too many bugs and spiders around. Please spray the area to rid these pests. Please pave the trails so they can be snowplowed during the winter. Chairlifts. That's last week's. It most certainly is. Where were we? Chairlifts need to be installed so the views can be enjoyed without hiking. A small deer came into our camp and stole my pickles. Can I be reimbursed? Escalators would help on steep uphill sections. A McDonald's would be nice at the beginning of the trail. If you think those last two were good, think about these next two. These are amazing. I love these two. The places where trails do not exist are not well marked. Too many rocks in the mountains. Now, forgive me for saying, but these just aren't real difficulties, are they? They're not real hardships. These are nothing compared to the terrible pain Paul suffered during his ministry. Turn with me back to 2 Corinthians. Look at verse 23 to 29 of chapter 11, and you'll see how Paul suffered. You know, these verses don't make easy reading, but let me share them with you. I've worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I'd been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false brothers. I have labored and toiled, and have often gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst, and have often gone without food. I've been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Who is weak, and I do not feel weak? Who is led into sin, and I do not inwardly burn? So Paul's suffering, including imprisonments, beatings, floggings, and a stoning. He faced life-threatening experiences, 3 shipwrecks, and a time in the open sea. He didn't always have enough food, clothes, or sleep. He didn't have many friends. He was constantly on the move, facing multiple dangers wherever he went. He also faced daily the pressure of his concern for all the churches. And now as you look back at the passage that Nick read for us earlier this evening, Paul has a thorn in his flesh. And I'm sure we've all been pricked by a thorn. And it certainly is painful, isn't it, just for a second or two. But Paul's thorn is in his flesh. It's embedded in him. So how bad was this particular pain and discomfort? Well, it was straight from hell. If you read closely, it was a messenger from Satan. A messenger from Satan sent to torment him. And torment him it did. This appears an unrecognizable sort of pain. An excruciatingly dreadful pain. Perhaps someone undergoing cancer treatment would understand a little more. You know, the pain associated with chemotherapy is notoriously bad. You know, would this be similar? Or what about other debilitating illnesses, like multiple sclerosis or Alzheimer's? I wonder if any of them come close to the sort of pain which Paul was suffering. Paul asked God to remove the pain, whatever it might have been. Some conjecture here, but perhaps Paul had good reason to ask. You know, pain-free, he could maybe plant more churches and could write more letters. Pain-free, he could preach to more people, could raise more money. He could mentor more disciples and prove the power of God even more. He could prove his power through the miracles that were so common in Ephesus. Acts 19, 11 to 12 reads, God did extraordinary miracles through Paul, so that even handkerchiefs and aprons that had touched him were taken to the sick, and their illnesses were cured, and the evil spirits left them. Paul asked over and over. Now we see in 2 Corinthians 12 verse 8 that he asked 3 times. On 3 occasions, Paul pulled out all the stops to ask God for his own miracle. Yet the pain didn't go away. Whatever the problem, it stayed with Paul. For how long? We don't know. The rest of his life? For some time? We don't know. But Jesus knew pain, weeping at Lazarus' tomb and over an unrepentant Jerusalem. He knew the physical pain of the cross and the personal pain of betrayal. He had some rejection. He'd seen rejection and had suffered disappointment, as surely we all have too. It seems silly to make the case that pain is just a part of life, but We all know that pain just happens. So here's a really important question for you. Will you find the positives in your pain? Paul did, and you can. Perhaps you already have, because pain has a purpose, which leads us to our first truth this evening. Let me just show you the picture. There is the picture. Skip ahead. Pain has a purpose. Look at just verses 7 and 8 in our passage. To keep me from being conceited because of these surpassing great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. Notice the purpose to the suffering which Paul experienced. It was to keep him from becoming conceited because of surpassing revelations. And the phrase "to keep me from becoming conceited" is the purpose of God. And I wanted to consider 2 things regarding what Paul is going through. You know, as mentioned already, this tormenting thorn in his flesh is from Satan. Satan uses trials, sufferings, and difficulties to torment us. He uses these different forms to harass us and trouble us. And that's exactly what we saw when we studied, didn't we, the book of Job. We saw it with Job. Satan is using suffering to torment people, to get them to turn away from the Lord. You know, Job is afflicted so it would be revealed that Job served God for nothing. But please notice that that is not God's purpose. God is not tormenting Paul. God is not harassing Job. God has another purpose by which he allows the suffering to happen in the world. For Paul, his suffering was due to the surpassing great revelations he received. You know, it's possible that Paul saw what eternity would look like and how he knew things the rest of humanity could never know. In such an unmeasurable gift would have given Paul seemingly limitless confidence, an assured confidence, enabling him to keep preaching despite terrible suffering. You know, it also gave him the perspective that such suffering in this life was not worth comparing to the glory of eternity. 2 Corinthians 4:17 for that reference. However, God understood that such knowledge also had potential to make Paul proud, arrogant, and conceited. God wanted Paul to be Christ-like in his humility. He didn't want him seeing himself as being above those he served. And to guarantee this, God gave to Paul a thorn in the flesh. And this thorn was given to Paul so that he would not exalt himself. God used this so that humility would be maintained. You know, throughout the scriptures, we see that God allows suffering purposefully. God allows suffering so that his purpose and good will be fulfilled in us. Now, it might be hard to imagine, but there are positive purposes found in pain. And there were many positives seen through the pain Paul suffered. Let me give you 2 examples, Philippi being one of them. In Philippi, Paul and Silas were beaten in public and taken away to the town prison, weren't they? You'd imagine they were the talk of the town, the headline in the newspaper, as it were. Surely it had become known that they had come to speak about Jesus, the Messiah. You know, imagine the headlines in the newspaper the following morning when details emerged of the song, the earthquake, and the jailer's conversion. You know, this must have been an incredible experience for all who witnessed it. You'd imagine that people talked. You imagine they shared their stories. And the day prior to this, when Paul and Silas were beaten, surely they'd have screamed their prayers to God, perhaps begging for relief. Now, relief didn't come, but the message of Christ exploded in that city. People would have seen their unfair suffering. They'd have heard their cries. Or what about in Ephesus? Paul preached there for 2 years until all had heard the gospel. Acts 19, verse 10. It tells us this. The latter part of the verse says, all those who lived in the province of Asia heard the word of the Lord. You know, sadly, not all were keen to hear from Paul or hear about the gospel. And as a result, a riot against Paul began to gather momentum. Thousands and thousands of people packed into a local theatre. And once inside, many screamed their disapproval of the message that Paul gave. A message he brought which threatened the worship of their idols and false gods. Yet many of the people inside weren't sure what all the fuss was about. What would you do in the hours that followed such an event? Wouldn't you want to know what caused this mass gathering and fury? Though Paul's wish was to preach to the crowd, he sadly wasn't able to do so. Yet I'm pretty sure you can be sure that thousands of people heard details of the gospel that day. Perhaps more heard this one day than had heard in the past 2 years combined. But at that moment, Paul only knew the pain of having to leave his home in a hurry. Paul only recognized the pain of having to leave behind his ministry. Like Paul, most of us can't see the purpose of our pain straight away. We scramble around looking for answers to the many questions we have. Think of the war for a moment. Think of all the loved ones who were deployed in Ukraine. You know, we shared our home with Natalia and Sophia whilst Andre remained back in Kyiv. You know, we really got to appreciate the truth behind the saying, absence makes the heart grow fonder. It was etched every day over Natalia's face. The pain of separation was clear to see. Yet Andre remained pretty resolute. He knew, although very painful it was being apart, he knew with Natalia and Sophia safely out of Kyiv, he could concentrate on what he had to do back in Kyiv, the training he had to give and the work that he undertook. But what about thinking closer to home? Remember the pain caused by the London bombings. You know, the events of that day caused our nation to act against the threat of global terror. You know, new security measures have been put in place since. New communication lines opened for the emergency services to be able to stay in contact. You know, it took a catastrophe like the London bombings to renew our procedures. Yet, in the case of the London bombings and in other events, the pain of great loss clouds the vision of pain's purpose. The same is true for our personal pain. In the midst of suffering, it's extremely difficult to find the purpose. It's so hard to see the purpose of our pain and to then celebrate that purpose. Unless, of course, our faith plays a role. Because you see, in the midst of pain, there's an opportunity for our faith to grow further. You know, it takes a tremendous step of faith to pray and be able to say to God, you know, I don't know the purpose of this pain, but I trust that you have a purpose in it. Now, Paul's not the only one to suffer in pain. You know, we've also mentioned Job, but what about Joseph being another? You know, his story for a very long time is a very painful one. You know, there was a time in his life where every angle of it showed nothing but pain. Remember, he was sold by his own brothers, betrayed by an employer's wife. He was forgotten by his friends in prison and ignored by God, the very God who had once promised him a position of leadership. If Joseph had been in his teenage years when he was captured, how many years passed before he understood God's hand in the process? Joseph suffered. It was like time stood still for him. It moved painfully slow, perhaps 10, maybe even 15 years passed by. That's a long time to be waiting. And as it turned out, God was very much at work, right in the middle of the pain. God was working in the courts of Egypt. God was working on the weather. He was working in his brother's life. And most importantly, God was working on Joseph's heart, testing and probing. He was forming a young man who would not waver from his faith in God, even if life took him from the depths of the dungeons to the heights of power and prosperity. God was at work. Make no mistake about it, God was working whilst Joseph was waiting. You know, the waiting may have been hard, extremely hard, but God was working. You know, there are no guarantees for any of us, none whatsoever. Pain happens. And for those who dare search for pain's purpose, there's one more thing, which leads us on to a second truth this evening. Pain has a power. After Paul pleads with Jesus three times for him to take away his pain, Jesus responds. But notice his response. He doesn't agree to remove the pain. Rather, in the first part of verse 9, Jesus says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." To understand this significance of what Jesus is saying, we need to break it down. Now, I'm no English expert, so I'm certainly no Greek expert either. However, the word order in Greek is different. In Greek, Jesus' statement sounds more like, "Sufficient it is for you, my grace." Here, Jesus actually places the word "sufficient" at the very front of the sentence. You see, the Greeks use this method to place heavy emphasis on an idea at the very start. In this case, the emphasis here is on the absolute sufficiency of the grace of Jesus. Jesus' sufficiency, in other words, his unfailing strength, is upon Paul. In the midst of his weakness, the grace of Jesus is all that Paul needs to possess. Now, Jesus here assures Paul there is nothing he lacks in his weakness. Why? Because he possesses the fully sufficient power of Jesus' grace through this trial. God has given sufficient grace that we are able to endure. You know, do we believe this? We have what we need for this life. We have what we need to endure such difficulties. We have what we need to flourish as disciples of Christ. We have God's grace to cope with the weaknesses that are not removed. Now, the second part of this verse is equally as significant. Look what it says, "For my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." God's power is made perfect through our weaknesses. It is when we are out of strength that we finally depend on God the most. Suffering is to burn away our pride, our self-confidence and independence. Therefore, we embrace the suffering given to us because we've been given God's grace, which is sufficient to endure. God often uses weak people to show his strength. Why? Because these weak people come entirely dependent on God. Take Gideon for an example. He was a fearful man, yet God made him victorious. What about Moses being another? God used him as the deliverer of his people out of Egypt. David's a further example. He was a shepherd who then became king of Israel. It's in our weaknesses that allows God's power to be put on display. Another thing which is striking in this verse is the language Paul used. Just look at verse 9 in its entirety. The verse says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.'" Now the phrase, "but he said to me," is in the perfect tense. He describes something that happened in the past that carries with it ongoing significance. Yet notice the phrase, "my grace is" and "my power is made perfect." These phrases are written in the present tense, conveying the idea that these statements are ongoing in their significance too. Taken together, the way this sentence is written means that what Jesus said in the past has ongoing significance into the present. This means Jesus' power continues to be sufficient for Paul and for us. In other words, Jesus' grace, that is his love for you, is powerful. It's powerful in securing all of the good for you. He has spoken this promise, and Jesus' promise continues to stand faithfully for his people. As a result, this incredible promise enables Paul to boast in his weaknesses. And you know what? It enables us to do the same. Which leads to our first application point. Boast gladly in your weaknesses. Look at the second part of verse 9. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. To boast means to hold your head up high in reference to your weakness. No longer do we, as Christians, need to run or hide from our own weaknesses. We don't need to find a remedy for the thorn in our side. We don't need to escape the pain and suffering our thorns bring. Why? Because when we embrace our weaknesses, the power of Christ rests upon us. It's not that we're unable to unlock our potential through our weaknesses, or that our struggles produce our strength. It's that our weaknesses and struggle open the door to the power of Christ. The power of Christ, which calms the storm, raises the dead, and enables ordinary men to walk on water. Christ's power falls upon us when we boast in our own weaknesses. Therefore, moving to the second application point, we can be content, which is our verse tonight. Be content with weakness. Verse 10 reads, that is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Now, let's just be clear. It doesn't mean that we should settle in and enjoy it. It means recognizing that God is working wonders. He's working wonders through our weaknesses. And in the verse, Paul lists five forms of weakness with which we can be content. Firstly, weaknesses. We can be content with our inabilities. We can't all do the same things. And we all have different challenges. I sit on the church council and we've been talking a lot about our building and how maybe the porch should look like. Well, it just, for me, not a clue when it comes to maintenance, DIY. These guys know all this stuff. I haven't got a clue. My motto is always, I never trained to be a mechanic, so I'm never going to fix a car. I'm not a builder, so that's what people train to do, so they should do those things. So we can't all do the same things. We all have different challenges. You know, secondly, Paul mentions insults. Those things which add insult to injury. Thirdly, Paul says we should delight in our hardships. And when we mean hardships, we mean serious and severe. Not the hardship of requiring an elevator so that you can see the mountaintop view, or the lack of a McDonald's restaurant at the start of the wilderness trail because you might be hungry before you set off. Fourthly, Paul mentions persecutions, like being hunted like an animal. And finally, Paul says we should delight in calamities, our pressures and stress. The reality is we need all these things so that we can become dependent on God. If God did not allow us to experience these failures, these sufferings, these difficulties, then we wouldn't rely on God. In fact, we would probably never rely on him. We would continue to think how great we are and how much we're in control. It is in our weakness and frailty that we surrender our will to God. The only way I've made it through the trials and pains in my life has been through the power of God. I don't have the power to make it through. God gave me the strength at just the right time. He sent me power to come to my aid and help me at just the right time. Therefore, I'll be content, delight, and take pleasures in my weaknesses. Because I know that God is at work in me so that his power is on display. So we can learn something really valuable, extremely valuable here. Focusing all our efforts on removing our difficulties is not the goal. Rather, we're able to look at trials and do exactly what James told us to do. James 1, verses 2 to 4 reads, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of any kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." So, as we close, if you remember nothing else tonight, remember this: the Lord's grace is sufficient for you. His power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, we can be content with our weaknesses because of his amazing grace. And we can boast in our weaknesses because that's when Christ's power is made perfect. And as a result, we can confidently say, as Paul does at the end of verse 10, "For when we are weak, then we are strong." Amen.